hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated. Good morning. The court is ready to go on its new session. All of us have had our robes cleaned during this mission, and we're delighted to see a full courtroom this morning. Before I begin, I would like to take note of three instances or incidents that are tied by the rule of law. And we as a court, and you as lawyers and as people of the state of Wisconsin, are committed to the rule of law, that all of us, government and public officials and non-officials of the state, adhere to the law of this country, state and federal. And it is the judiciary's function in our system to interpret and apply the law. Our interpretations and applications are not always popular. Indeed, sometimes we don't necessarily agree that they're good government policy, but that it is our obligation to interpret and apply that law, whether it be constitutional law or statutory or regulation. And the three incidents to which I refer are, one, the hurricane, which has ravaged our cities and states, and especially New Orleans. It's a tragic loss of life, and we must remember not only the dead, but the survivors who have to cope with the death of their loved ones and who have to remake their lives with the loss of homes and jobs and communities. The courts do not escape unscathed. The Federal Fifth Circuit, which resides in New Orleans, and the various state courts of Louisiana, the Supreme Court and the trial courts, have their files and papers floating somewhere, destroyed. And the last time we communicated indirectly with Louisiana, they were housed in a hotel. The Louisiana Supreme Court, the Director of State Courts, was housed in a hotel in Houston. Thousands of lawyers have lost offices and files. Some probably cannot be replicated. I spoke to Chief Justice Smith's office in Mississippi, and their trial courts have been hit, as well as lawyers, and they are coping with that and keeping courts open and conducting the business of the state. The second incident is 9/11, New York City, the World Trade Center, a direct attack, as we see it, on the rule of law. And each year I have reminded the people who come to court in September and our own employees of the necessity for all of us in the judicial system to remember the rule of law and to continue operations. And we are reminded today of those who died at the World Trade Center and those who have survived and live with that tragedy. Chief Judge Kaye of the New York State Court of Appeals and the judiciary and staff of New York responded to that disaster as they lost employees and lost buildings and files and records. And the third incident that I call your attention to is the death of Chief Justice William H. Rehnquist, a native son of this state, born and raised in Milwaukee and the suburbs. He did not forget his roots in Wisconsin, although he was fond of saying that the military service taught him that he should avoid Midwest winters. And he settled in Arizona and practiced law there before he joined the Department of Justice in Washington, D.C. He's been to Wisconsin numerous times and swore me in as Chief Justice of the state in September 1996, and the court had a private dinner for him at that time. On behalf of the state of Wisconsin and the Conference of Chief Justices and the National Center for State Courts, as well as my personal views, I represented these groups in the state yesterday in Washington, D.C. None of us have been able to attend the funeral services this afternoon because his own view was you stay in the institution and you work as long as you can. And that's why we're here working this morning. That's what he would have done and would have wanted us to do. Chief Justice Rehnquist was a champion of judicial independence and the rule of law, and was renowned for the sound administration of the judicial system. And he was a friend of the state courts and honored his fellow judges on the state court system, recognizing that the state courts handle 98% of the judicial business of the country, and that they become an important part of the judicial system. And so, in recognition of these three events in our history, I ask for a moment of silence. If we turn to the business of today, first want to announce that we have, in keeping with our system and our long-standing tradition here, we have various guests from schools, and they come here with the court with class. We invite high schools, students from all over the state to join us for an oral argument. And then they will meet with a justice of the court at noon, and we will talk about the procedures of the court, not the substance of the cases we are hearing. Everyone is invited to join us at lunch after the second oral argument. And our students today are from Oregon High School, and their teacher is Bryant Root, who is a graduate of the State Bar and Courts Justice Teaching Institute. You can't see them, but they can see all of us because there's an overflow group today, and they are in the orientation room for the tours downstairs. So although we cannot see you, you should all rise. Because we are recognizing you, Oregon High School. You now may be seated, Oregon High School. We also have with us Department of Justice. I think they're interns from probably the law schools, with Assistant Attorney General Michael Voss. Would they stand, please? Are they here? Good. Well, welcome, and you may be seated. Let me also introduce the court to you now that you Oregon High School students have been introduced, as well as those present from the Attorney General's office. Starting on my far left is Justice Lewis Butler. Seated next to him is Justice David Prosser. To my immediate left is Justice Ann Walsh Bradley. I'm Shirley Abrahamson, the Chief Justice. To my immediate right is Justice John Wilcox, who, as you may notice, came in walking slowly because he has a walking cast on. This accident happened when the court was not in session. I say no more. He tells me he really wants me to say it was while he was trout fishing, but before he even put his line in the water, as I understand it. Seated next to Justice Wilcox is Justice Patrick Crooks, and on my far right is Justice Patience Rogensack. With that introduction, we will proceed to our first case, which is Darylyn Greyhound Park versus James E. Doyle, 03AP421. We will hear first from Stephen Morgan, representing Darylyn Greyhound Park, then Thomas Bolavia, representing the state of Wisconsin, and then 5 minutes to Attorney Douglas Anderson, representing the Miki tribes, and then a rebuttal by Stephen Morgan. We are ready to proceed. Mr. Morgan.
Thank you, and may it please the court, opposing counsel, and counsel for the amicus. My name is Stephen L. Morgan. I do represent Darylyn Greyhound Park. Its executives are present in the courtroom today. This case and this court is very familiar with the issues. I will not go over the history or anything else. I will dive into the issues immediately. The first point I think that needs to be made is that Darylyn does agree that the 1992 compacts were valid when they were signed. And these were signed, obviously, before the 1993 constitutional amendment. The issue and the focus of this case is how can the governor, in the year 2003 and also in 1998, how could that governor authorize casino gaming for anybody when the casino gaming had been expressly prohibited by Article 4, Section 24 of the Wisconsin Constitution when it was amended in 1993. The governor carefully tries to phrase all of his issues, all of his arguments, from the perspective of the compacts or from the tribe's perspective. How does this impact the tribe? How does it impact the compact? That is the governor's argument. It is wrong, because the frame of this issue must be around what did the governor do wrong in connection with the constitutional amendment. Did the governor have authority after the amendment became effective in 1993? Did he have authority to authorize casino gaming?
And we're talking about, we got two governors here.
Yes, ma'am.
And this case involves the actions of Governor Thompson, as I understand it, in renewing the contracts, or not letting them lapse in 98. Is that right?
That would be true, yes. And then
talking about the 2000, the compacts entered into by Governor Doyle.
I'm talking about both compacts. The ones
by,
talking
about both. Okay.
The one in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
I think more importantly, the one in 2003. But both of them are affected by the actions taken by the governor or by the failure of the governor to take the proper action.
In 98.
In both 98 and in 2003.
Did the Panzers make the decision about the 2003?
I didn't hear the start.
Didn't the Panzer decision take care of the 2003 issue?
I hope that it did. And under doctrines of stare decisis, the compacts in 2003 are invalid. Let me frame or perhaps address the issue in a little bit different way.
So before, I don't want to change the direction because I appreciate your argument. Yesterday, and I read it just coming in today, we received this amicus letter from the District Attorney of Milwaukee, E. Michael McCann, who is urging this court to consider in this lawsuit whether or not Dairyland has standing because of some recent developments. I'm just quoting this from, and you've received this, I take it.
I received it not from Mr. McCann.
Okay.
He didn't send me a copy.
I'm reading from page 2 of the letter that indicates that if Dairyland still has standing because Dairyland, subsequent to the start of this suit, has voluntarily sold an option to an outside developer working with Indian gambling interests to turn the property owned by Dairyland into a casino featuring the very games that Dairyland undertakes to argue violate the Wisconsin Constitution. Now, I'm just reading it because perhaps you're not that well acquainted, but I just wanted to, before we get into the whole thing, talk about standing, because according to the letter, he seems to indicate, and these are my words, that, well, you want it both ways. Either you want no gambling, or if you lose and you get gambling, then according to this, Dairyland reportedly will receive in excess of $40 million in an option that they signed. How does that give you your, this is a win-win or situation?
Well, first of all, it is in the record, has been in the record for some time prior to the previous argument. And Dairyland started this case in 2001. The $40 million price would be a loss, as the record shows, for Dairyland. It does not recover their costs. The governor has had notice of what Dairyland has done throughout. The issue of standing was not addressed by the governor, has not been an issue. It was not necessarily an issue at our prior at the prior hearing on this matter in 2003. But it was, the option was already issued at that time. The client has made a business decision. If this court were to say that the Article 4, Section 24 does not apply to tribal gaming, then effectively, as we also saw in the newspaper today, the fourth of the five Greyhound parks closed business, at least as the newspaper said, because of the effects of competition from tribal gaming, leaving only Dairyland in existence. The effects of the court continuing or allowing tribal gaming to continue under the current course, as the governor has outlined that course, I think Dairyland is appropriate in trying to seek a business decision. It needs to sell. It cannot continue to operate as the four other of the five tracks have decided over the course of time.
Counselor, I want to break your argument on the contracts into pieces in regard to the different compacts we're talking about, and I want you to focus on the 1998 compact and before that on the 92 ones for one purpose. Didn't both of those agreements require an affirmative act by either the governor on behalf of the state or the tribes on their own behalf in order to terminate those agreements?
And precisely, that is exactly where I was going to go.
Okay, and so it isn't a matter, I guess what I'm thinking of is this. No one took an affirmative act to terminate the 93 or the 98 compacts, right?
Well, the 92 compact.
92. I'm sorry.
The 92 compact was the first, very first compact.
Right.
And so it was entered into after good faith negotiation on both sides.
I know, but in order to terminate it, there would have had to have been an affirmative act by one of the parties, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And so the 98 then was a modification to some degree of that compact, and it too contained language saying it would just keep on rolling over for like periods unless someone affirmatively terminated it, correct?
Exactly.
And
it's in Article 25 or Section 25.
Right, and no one's terminated the 1998 compact. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is what the governor failed to do.
Well, that's a separate argument. I'm just trying to be sure that I understand the facts correctly. So if no one has terminated the 1998 compact, isn't it still ongoing today?
It is my position that the, as the majority in the Panzer case described it, the doom and gloom arguments vanish because the 1992 compacts continue in place since there was no termination of the provisions. And the wording in the compact, I believe, is that they automatically renew.
Right.
The first compact went for 7 years from 1992 until 1999. They got renewed in or amended in 1998 primarily. They went then on a course of 5 year renewals after that. And until someone says, I'm exercising the notice of non-renewal, those compacts remain in place.
Okay, so you and I agree on that.
Yes.
What's unlawful about those compacts, given the constitutional amendment that came down in 93 from your perspective?
What is unlawful is what the governor failed to do. The governor failed to non-renew. The compacts were in violation. Let me start that again. The casino gaming is in violation of the Constitution. And the governor, it is his responsibility as the chief executive officer to enforce the Constitution, which had been adopted by a 59-41% vote. It was a landslide vote in 1993 of the populace. So the governor failed to carry out the will of the people in both 1998 and 2003.
And indeed, the governor, there wasn't silence on both sides in 98 so that it was renewed on the same terms. Isn't that right?
They were negotiated compacts.
They were negotiated amendments to the contract in 98. And it seems to me your position is that the amendments are invalid because the governor had no authority to violate state law, the constitutional amendment.
That is the argument.
And the governor, instead of negotiating amendments, should have said, we are not renewing it.
That is correct.
Under the terms of the compact.
That is correct.
And in 2003, the governor did not say, we're not renewing it. The governor said, we're amending it, the governor and the tribes.
Correct. And this case was started in 2001, well in advance of the 180-day non-renewal notice that was required. Let's follow what happens if indeed non-renewal is given tomorrow by the governor for the compacts that, in our view, expire in the year 2008. The legislature would be faced with the democratic decision of what to do. The tribes would continue.
The democratic public amendment of the Constitution. You're not talking about partisan politics.
No, I'm small
okay.
D.
Good.
Very small D. The people will make the decision while ongoing is tribal gaming. Tribal gaming doesn't shut down.
Why not?
Because the 1992 compacts continue to roll forward.
If they've been amended, it seems to me then the original contract is not in existence. But your position is it is in existence.
The 1998 compact did not address Article or Section 25 of those compacts. The 2003 compact amendments do, and they delete Article 25
so
and replace.
98.
No, our 98 continues Section 25.
It expanded the number of slot machines.
It changed monies and expanded for one tribe and did other things for others. But what it didn't do was touch Section 25, which was on duration and on notice of non-renewal. That language was not touched. In 2003...
98 valid amendments valid in Europe. In your brief, I read it as not. 98 valid amendments are not valid.
They are not valid, but they are not as important as 2003 because of the huge number of changes in 2003.
So are you giving up your argument on the 1998 amendments?
No, I'm not. No, I'm not. What happens under the way I see things and the way I think it is clear as to how it has to happen. The 2003, as it occurred in New Mexico, New York, and I believe Kansas, those are void. Panzer says, in essence, that those compacts are void. So you go back to the 98 compact. You go back to the 92 compacts.
So you're not threatening the 92 compacts, is that right?
Absolutely not.
And they can be renewed indefinitely as long as they're not changed.
Per the 1992 compacts, they get renewed automatically short of the governor issuing a note or the tribes issuing a notice of non-renewal. When a notice of non-renewal is issued, the compacts say that the parties must negotiate in good faith. If they reach the end of the term, which in this case would be, let's say, 2008,
or 98.
Or in 2003 from the 1998, then the tribes can go to federal court. And the federal court will rule on the tribe's position at that point.
However, the contract clause on the basis of impairment of the contract, is that the issue with IGRA?
No.
You go to federal court? What's the issue in the federal court?
The issue in federal court would undoubtedly be the state didn't have the governor didn't have the power to non-renew.
But that was a state issue.
That's a state issue.
So why are they going to federal court?
I don't know. But that's their remedy.
You put them there.
I will put them there. And I'm sure that they will be there. And they will be arguing that this court in Panzer was wrong.
Mr. Morgan, under your view, was Governor Thompson entitled in 1998 to make any changes at all, negotiate any changes at all in the compacts?
I'll say no, but I'll come back and say yes in a half a second. The governor should have non-renewed, at which point he could have negotiated. Because that's what the compact says. One of the parties non-renews, and the parties, both sides, then go into good faith negotiations. Where that ends up, I don't think that the governor has the authority to allow the continuation of casino gaming.
Any.
So
he has no authority under the state law.
That is correct. But while this is pending, while negotiations are pending, the tribes pursuant to the compacts expressly have the power to continue gaming as it was under the previous compact. So that if they go to federal court, even when it's pending in federal court, they can continue gaming. Even after the 2008 time frame has
expired. Mr. Morgan, why are we handling this case? It seems as if you're saying that there is preemption based on IGRA. And that this really belongs in federal court. At least that's what I followed what you just said a few minutes ago. Why are we hearing this case today?
You are hearing the case because the question is, did the governor have authority?
Well, isn't that what the federal court's going to look at now?
I do No, I think that this court, as a state decision, has the obligation and the right to decide what its constitution says as it in regards to the gaming and in regards to the powers of its governor.
Well, Counselor, isn't it our obligation to determine what is compatible under state law? Because it has to be compatible under state law in order to comply with IGRA.
And that is what this court is looking at as to whether or not casino gaming in any format is compatible.
In your answer to Justice Prosser was the governor had no authority under state law in 1998 to extend those compacts, extend them in duration. Because of the 93 constitutional amendment, you said to Justice Prosser, governor had no authority. You would take that position in one moment, but that you would double back in a second moment and say the governor did have authority under the 98 amendments.
To negotiate.
Negotiate. So tell us why.
Because the compact says so. Well, the compact expressly says in Article 25, Section E, that they will enter into negotiations for a successor compact governing the conduct of a Class 3 gaming activities to become effective following the expiration of this compact.
I agree that's what the compact said. And I agree under IGRA that you have to do good faith negotiation. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. But in doing good faith negotiation, if we take your position, the governor had no authority under state law to negotiate for prohibited gaming, prohibited by the Wisconsin Constitution. Therefore, the governor could not renegotiate allowing gaming prohibited by the Constitution. Therefore, it would go to federal court to see what would be done under IGRA. I mean, that's the way I follow your argument.
I follow your statement, and I agree with it. I would like to add, though, that this is an opportunity at this point in the year 2005, mm-hmm. with the legislature in session at this point, if there were a constitutional amendment proposed and adopted by the legislature at its first time, then in 2007, they could again, adopt that, and then it could go to the voters, all the while until some point in either 2008 or 2009, depending on the tribe, the tribes remain in the gaming business.
What kind of constitutional amendment are you thinking about?
Whatever the small d democratic process decides. If the democratic process decides that Article 4, Section 24 should be amended to expressly allow for tribal gaming, that's what they would do. If it decides that it should be tribal gaming plus competition for paramutual places or for any other person, that's what the democratic process would do.
And that's why the Indian gaming is continuing, because under IGRA and under the compacts, there has to be good faith negotiation, and until that's resolved, the games continue.
The games continue because the compacts don't expire until 2008. The good faith negotiation by the terms of the compact wouldn't necessarily have to start until the compacts run out. I assume that they would start in advance of the compacts expiring.
Even in spite of the Panzer decision?
I'm sorry?
Even in spite of the Panzer decision?
I think that if there were to be no efforts to amend the Constitution, then the Panzer decision would say it would be meaningless for the governor to pursue casino gaming absent a change to the Constitution.
And that's really your position about the 98 amendments. The governor had no authority to continue those contracts. Let's talk about, for a moment, the impairment of contract, because under the Panzer decision, there's some language in there that would indicate that there's language definitely that says the 92 compacts are valid when signed. They were valid. You agree with that?
Yes, I do.
There's language in there that says there's a question about the 98 amendments. You can read it that way. And the question which the court did not consider in Panzer was the impairment of contract, if you did anything about the 98 amendments, right?
Right.
Is that a state issue or a federal issue? And it may be both, but the are we preempted?
You are not preempted. I believe that the impairment of contracts provision applies to any contract compact in a state court is to make a decision on that.
And your position is that it's governed by the federal contract impairment clause?
My opinion or my position on this is that there's no impairment when by the very terms of the contract between the parties, when the contract runs out, one party can say no more. And that's what the notice of non-renewal says. I want this no more. And it is perfectly legitimate for a party to say, I am stopping the continuation of this contract, particularly in this situation where the Constitution says there can be no casino gaming.
Morgan, with Native American casinos springing up all over the state by 1998, why wouldn't it have been reasonable for a governor basically to allow the 91-92 compacts to go forward for fear that acting otherwise would impair the compacts? Impair the obligations of the contracts and compacts that existed.
The governor, assuming it's prior to 180 days before the compact expires, at that point had an obligation to enforce, to execute on Article 4, Section 24, and to say no casino gaming. The compact...
Where does the 93 amendment say the governor had that obligation?
It says it because it says this state does not authorize any forms of casino gaming except for the lottery, etc., that is specifically carved out. So,
was that amendment retroactive?
I don't view it as retroactive because if it were retroactive, we would be having perhaps a different position on whether the 92 compacts, when they were signed, would have been valid. I don't think it could be retroactive.
I don't understand how you can argue that something that was valid in 1991 or 1992 and that was authorized back then to roll over and over and over, what's wrong with that? Why couldn't the governor honor that?
Because let's say that instead of the tribes, that these were casinos being operated by folks from Las Vegas and Atlantic City, and that these professional casino owners had a contract with the state in 1992 that had the same kind of terms that the tribal ones does. But at the end of the term, the state can non-renew. The state is looking at those compacts or contracts at that point saying, those are illegal per se. I can't enter into an agreement to continue to perpetuate casino gaming because the rule of law changed very dramatically. So until the term of the contract runs out, which is in that case 1998 or 1999, it was a 7-year term, until that term runs out, it stays in effect. I can't impair that contract.
It would make it a perpetual in duration contract, the 92.
If you never not renewed. And I don't think that the governor had that authority to ignore the will of the people. My red light is on.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan. You will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. We'll now hear from Thomas Bellavia, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin. Counsel?
please the Court. I'm Assistant Attorney General Tom Bellavia, and I'm here today on behalf of the
Apologize for mispronouncing the name, counsel.
I'm here representing the respondents in this case, Governor James Doyle and Administration Secretary Mark Morata. With me at council table are Assistant Attorney General Maura Whalen and Attorney Douglas Anderson, who has the Court's permission to use the last 5 minutes of the Governor's time to speak on behalf of the amicus tribes. The Court is called upon in this case to decide the question of what effect a change in state gambling law can have upon the continuation of tribal state gaming compacts that have been validly executed pursuant to federal law and are legally in effect prior to the change in state gaming law. In IGRA, Congress has provided for the use of intergovernmental compacts to adjust certain relations between coordinate sovereigns in the federal system who otherwise don't have legislative jurisdiction over one another. In order for that compact system to work, the compacts themselves, when they are validly executed and legally in effect, as these were, must have preemptive force with respect to the laws of each individual signatory government. Here, the compacts that are at issue expressly give the parties a periodic right to choose either to issue a notice of non-renewal or to continue the compacts, whether by extending them, amending them, or allowing them to automatically renew pursuant to their own terms. And the parties have also included a conflict of law provision in the compacts, under which they expressly agree that if there's ever a conflict between the terms of the compact and any provision of state or tribal law, including subsequent enactments, then the contractual relationship between the parties shall be governed by the compact terms and not by the conflicting provisions in the law of either party. But Dairyland's claim is contrary to that agreement because it relies at its base upon a conflict between a 1993 amendment to the state constitution and the provisions in the compact that authorize the tribes to offer certain casino-type games. The text of that constitutional amendment does not expressly direct issuance of notices of non-renewal, and it doesn't mention the governor or the compacts or the tribes. It's addressed to the state legislature, and it expressly deals with the subjects of what games can be offered as part of the state lottery and what forms of gambling the legislature may authorize by law.
Is it your position that the constitutional amendment doesn't bind the governor?
Not at all. The constitutional amendment does bind the governor, but the compacts and federal law also bind the governor. And I think that this court has a responsibility to apply federal law and federally sanctioned compacts in addition to state law. Dairyland suggests that the 1993 amendment contains a sufficiently strong public policy against casino gambling, against legalized casino gambling in the state, to support the inference that no state official could have any authority to allow a compact to continue that permits that kind of gaming. But I would submit that the court should not apply the public policy of the state in a legal vacuum. The court has a duty, as I just said, to interpret these other provisions as well and to read them all together and reconcile them with one another as far as possible, and not to jump immediately to broadly construing the state public policy in a way that may directly conflict with the compacts and with federal law when it's possible to avoid such a conflict by a narrower interpretation of state law that is at least equally plausible when you look at the language of the 93 amendment.
Counsel, your opposing counsel seems to take the position, both in argument and in brief, that Panzer controls this case. That on page 10 of the brief he says that the Panzer court ruled that the governor cannot lawfully authorize forms of gambling on tribal lands that are illegal under state law, and casino gambling is illegal, prohibited by the constitutional amendment of 1993 and also criminal laws. So he says that follow Panzer's holding, 98 compacts are per se illegal. There's no way of getting around it. In your brief, you are advocating overruling Panzer. Is it also your position that if we do not overrule Panzer, that Panzer decides this case?
No, not at all.
What's the distinction?
I think there were three questions there. Let me try to
approach them. I wasn't sure, not at all.
Approach them in order if I can. The Panzer decision, the additional games portion of the Panzer decision, expressly distinguished the Dairyland case from that case based on the presence in the Dairyland case of impairment of contract issues and IGRA issues that the court recognized would be controlling in the Panzer case.
Counsel, when you say expressly distinguished, it seems to me more accurate to say left open as unanswered, as rather than expressly distinguished.
I won't quarrel with you about on that point. It left those questions open, but it also expressly recognized that those questions would be central to the resolution of the Dairyland case. I think that's very clear in the Panzer decision. The interesting thing is then that those questions were not directly addressed in connection with the additional games that were at issue in the Panzer case. And the dissenting opinion in Panzer suggested that the original 91-92 compacts, which contained provisions that allowed the parties to amend those compacts in the future, notwithstanding subsequent changes in state or tribal law, grandfathered in not only the right of the tribes to play the original games that were specifically listed in the original compacts, but also grandfathered in their right to negotiate in the future, to amend those compacts, to allow any games that would have been legal to allow in 1991 and 1992.
But that decision was made in Panzer, and I think Justice Bradley asked you, if we don't overrule Panzer, does it control the questions presented here? And you said no, and I kind of like to hear what your response in full is in regard to that no answer.
The decision in Panzer did not, on the additional games, didn't rely at all on any questions about the impairment of contracts or the IGRA. It relied on the interpretation of state law and applying the state public policy of the 93 Amendment directly to the governor's attempt to add additional games. The decision that we're asking the court to reach in this case is based squarely on the continuing vitality of the original compacts by virtue of the impairment of contracts clause and IGRA. So when you go to that point, then, the decision in Dairyland that we're asking the court to reach stands on those grounds independently of what was done in Panzer.
Counsel, are you asking us to say that the games we said were unconstitutional in Panzer are constitutional today just because you're picking a different theory? I guess I'm not following.
No, we're not saying that they would be constitutional today in the absence of a pre-existing compact that authorized them. We're saying that they may be permitted today because they are authorized by a pre-existing compact that is sanctioned by federal law. This would be if those compacts were terminated and if notices of non-renewal were issued and the compacts expired, and then we were in the successor compact negotiation phase, and the question arose of whether casino-type games could be included in the successor compacts. Then I think the reasoning of the Panzer decision would apply. The Panzer decision seems to have reasoned in that way in the 2003 context, and that's the point that we disagree with. We're asking the court to go back, look at the additional games issue again, and expressly consider the question of whether the parties reserved in the original agreements the right to amend, to add any games that were legal in 1991.
So you are asking us to overrule our decision.
We're asking you, we are definitely, I cannot hide from the fact that we are asking the court to overturn the outcome of the additional games portion of the Panzer decision.
So if we don't overrule that portion of Panzer, then in fact we can't get where you're asking us to go. Is that correct?
No. No, you can still, there's nothing still, it's logically distinct. Nothing still prevents the court from reaching the, from reaching the impairment of contract issues and the IGRA issues in the Dairyland case. In addition, nothing prevents the court from addressing the legislative history question regarding the meaning of the 1993 amendment, specifically in regard to the question of whether there was any intent in that amendment to compel termination of pre-existing compacts. Again, that was a question that wasn't part of the Panzer case.
What about other portions of Panzer? Panzer also made a ruling in regard to the so-called perpetual provisions of the compacts, and also in regard to the question of waiver of immunity. Are you asking us to review that again?
No, you're not.
Just the games, the scope of the games.
Just the additional games portion of the decision, and on the basis of, on the specific ground that I just described, considering the effect under impairment of contract and federal law terms of the particular right to amend in the future.
I'm going to ask Justice Bradley be given the opportunity to continue her questioning, which started this line. Justice Bradley.
And thank you, Chief. And so what you're saying, it seems to me that, I want to be careful, but I'm not sure you're getting it to us straight. You're saying, no, court, you don't have to overrule Panzer. I wouldn't ask you to do that. But if you continue the analysis left open in the Panzer majority when it referenced Dairyland, that is, impairment of contract, and these are federal questions, and who knows, they pose constitutional issues, then you wouldn't have to overrule Panzer, but you would have to change its result. Isn't that what you're arguing?
It's a characterization that I think serves a very limited purpose in the context of this argument. I make the distinction between changing the result of the additional games portion of Panzer and overruling in order to highlight to the court that it's our view that the Panzer decision didn't expressly discuss the issues that we're asking it to consider in relation to the additional games. Therefore, there is no express legal holding written in the Panzer decision on that point. And I think the concerns about the court overruling itself are at least a little bit diminished when the court is not being asked to expressly contradict an express legal holding from the previous case, but is simply being asked to address a question that it set aside in order to help to develop and clarify the law.
Counsel, I want to ask you about the impairment of contract claims. I read your brief. It sounds like you're arguing that not permitting the compacting of further arrangements with the tribes impairs the tribe's right of contract. Is that correct?
No.
What kind of contract are we talking about? You're talking about the state's right of contract or the tribe's right of contract?
I think we're talking about both, but I would not buy into the idea of looking at the impairment question strictly in terms of rights or of the rights of a specific party. I think that the concept of the obligation of contract is broader than just the specific rights and duties that parties have under the agreement, although it includes those. And one of the arguments that Dairyland makes against our position on impairment is that there's no impairment of obligation because the state has no obligation to allow the compacts to continue because of the right to terminate them.
I need to go back and look a little bit more carefully at whose rights you're talking about, because the state does not represent the tribes. My understanding is if we were to rule that the tribes had no rights under these compacts as a holding, we'd have no ability to do that. They're not parties before us, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so then are you arguing on behalf of the state that the state's obligation of contract is somehow impaired?
Well, the state has a right under the compacts to choose whether to terminate them or to allow them to continue.
Okay, and if we're talking about the state's right, aren't you in kind of a funny position of arguing the state has a right under a private agreement that's in conflict with a state constitutional statute that was passed by the members, all the citizens of our state?
I don't think so, for two reasons.
Okay.
One, it's inherent in the concept of intergovernmental compacts that I described that kind of situation would arise. The whole purpose of those kinds of compacts is to mediate relations, as I said, between sovereign entities that can't directly legislate over one another, but that have some subject matter where their interests are entwined. And it is necessary for both sides to, you know, accept some limitations and make some sacrifices when they enter into that kind of a contractual agreement.
As I read your brief, it seemed to me that underlying the impairment of contract concept is the power of the state to renege or fail to renew or change the compact, and that the power of the state as a result of IGRA in the U.S. Constitution is limited in changing the compact, and that you're really not arguing on behalf of the state impairment of contract or the tribal impairment of contract, but what are the powers of the state under the federal law to change?
Well, I think we made both arguments.
Okay.
Intended to make both arguments. In addition to the impairment argument, there is an argument under IGRA that IGRA basically controls the situation here. Once a compact has been entered into by the states and the tribe and approved by the U.S. Secretary of Interior, it is in effect. That's the language within the meaning of IGRA, and IGRA provides thereafter that Class 3 gaming on that tribe's lands shall be fully subject to the terms and conditions of the compact. And it further provides that specifically says state laws pertaining to the prohibition of gambling shall not apply to that gaming. Now, Dairyland has conceded throughout this litigation that the change in the state constitution did not immediately void the original compacts just because there was this distinction between this conflict over what kinds of gaming were allowed. Their position is that it compels the governor to issue a notice of non-renewal of the compacts. But under the terms of the compacts, a notice of non-renewal has to be issued at least 180 days before the compact expires. 180 days before the compact expires, the compact is still in effect. Because the compact is in effect, IGRA says that state law pertaining to the prohibition of gambling, which includes the 1993 constitutional amendment, does not apply to tribal gaming under that compact. So at that time, when Dairyland wants to compel a notice of non-renewal, there is no conflict under the federal law at that point in time because the compact controls. That's our position on the federal law.
Well, under your position, the state could never make gambling illegal. The state's hands are tied once they sign the compact for the rest of the life of the state of Wisconsin. The state can never change the law, right?
No.
How do they go about doing it?
They can go about it by terminating the compacts pursuant to their own terms, by simply exercising the notice of non-renewal. Currently, the governor has the authority. The governor currently has been allocated the discretion to make the determination whether to continue or to terminate the compacts. The duration portion of the Panzer decision, which we're not challenging in this case, preserves to the legislature the right to reallocate the distribution of authority and to determine what can and can't be done under the compacts. The compact provision itself, the termination provision, gives the right to terminate the compacts, to issue non-renewal notice to the state. It doesn't say who can act on behalf of the state. So if the state were to choose in the future through the political process to reallocate authority and to, you know, if the legislature directly wanted to exercise that discretion itself and pass a law saying that the compacts are hereby non-renewed, or if the Constitution were amended in that way, that would be perfectly possible. It's our position that that does not raise the same impairment of contract problems that are raised by Dairyland's claim, because the conflict of law provision in the compact specifically says that if there is a conflict between state law and the compact shall control. In their case, they're inferring the termination from exactly that conflict, which is precisely what is precluded by Section 26 of the compacts.
Counsel, tell us, if you would, in a good summary form, why you think Panzer was wrong in regard to adding games.
In 91 and 92, the state agreed that the compacts could be amended in the future to allow the tribes to begin offering any Class 3 games that they could lawfully have been allowed to begin offering in 1991 and 1992. And they further agreed in those compacts that the terms of the compacts would prevail over any conflicting changes in state law. Because of that pre-existing contractual agreement, it's our position that the additional games issue in Panzer is similarly situated to the original games issue in Dairyland with regard to impairment of contract and IGRA principles. That is that.
Go ahead.
The agreement to amend in the future to add the additional games is built into the compacts, protected by federal law and by the state and federal constitution.
Is there any question that the games that were added in 2003 are Class 3 games?
No, there's no question about that.
Counselor, doesn't your argument that you've just given an answer to Justice Crooks's question apply equally to every other provision that was an amendment to the compact that was struck down in Panzer?
I'm not sure I'm following the question.
Well, Justice Crooks's question was Panzer wrong in adding the games, and why? And your response was there was a pre-existing right to amend the compact, and since that right was pre-existing, the new games that were added were games that were appropriately added. Well, if there was a right to amend the compacts, why doesn't that argument apply to everything else in Panzer as well? Seems to me it's a very broad brush.
Oh, I understand. Let me address it with regard to the duration part, because I think that's the most important. It doesn't apply to the duration portion of Panzer in the same way, because the law that the court relied upon in invalidating the perpetual duration provisions of 2003 was law that preexisted. It was based on inherent separation of powers principles in the state constitution that were in existence long before 1991. And so the governor had no authority, according to the reasoning of the Panzer decision, to ever agree to a compact, that would even allow an amendment to do that in the future, because it couldn't have even been done in the original compact. Here it is conceded that the original scope of gaming was lawful when it was entered, and so it was also lawful to grandfather in other games that would have been legal at that time. But we're not denying that something that is never legal or something that is completely illegal at the time that a contract is originally entered, in that situation, you can't first enter the contract and then use that contract to say, well, it's legal because the contract says so. The cases that from New York and Kansas and New Mexico that Dairyland relies on all dealt with that kind of situation. They dealt with situations where there wasn't a valid pre-existing compact already in effect that was being invalidated based on state law. They dealt with situations where the existing compacts were void from the beginning because the state law didn't allow them to be entered in the first place.
State law didn't allow the governor to do it himself or herself in those states.
Well, I think the issue may have been different in different states. I don't remember the specifically what was the issue.
I have a question. You keep saying that under the contract it could be not renewed, but this isn't the same as any contract between two private individuals about you just can walk away and say I'm not renewing it. Doesn't the state federal law and the compact require that there be continued negotiation and obligations on behalf of both the state and the tribe before anyone can walk away?
Yes, and I don't think I didn't mean to imply a walk away from non-renewal. I think
so there's a very limited ability.
I think the procedural sequence was fairly accurately described by opposing counsel. First, you would have the issuance of the notice of non-renewal. There's a duty then to negotiate for a successor compact. If the negotiations aren't successfully concluded before the subsequent expiration date, then there are some options under the tribe either has to stop offering the games or I think they're to seek relief in federal court.
I have another question. Did Panzer leave open the question of whether the Panzer decision violated the impairment of contract in IGRA? In that Panzer only dealt only with state law?
I believe it did. Yes.
That's your position, I understand it. That,
yes.
Which means that you can deal with the impairment of contract and IGRA issues here, assuming the court has jurisdiction, without violating Panzer because Panzer didn't reach those decisions.
That's our position.
But it's also your position we can't reach those issues because they're preempted by IGRA in federal court.
We argue that the court does not have jurisdiction for that reason. That if the court does not rule in our favor, that is logically a first. That's logically a threshold question. The court rules against us on that and proceeds. We think we should still win for the other reasons. If the court decides that it does have jurisdiction,
Mr. Bellavia,
Justice Prosser,
you are asking that portions of the Panzer decision be overruled. Why didn't the state seek review of the Panzer decision if they didn't agree with it?
I was not part of the making of that decision, and I was told that we weren't going to petition for certiorari, and I gladly accepted that decision. I'm not sure I know as a historical matter why the decision was not made to seek Supreme Court U.S. Supreme Court review.
We are going to federal court on IGRA. Of course, the federal court had already ruled here that it was a state court decision.
Yes, I'm not sure how procedurally whether you could collaterally attack the state Supreme Court decision directly in federal court by the state. Certainly, the tribes might have had the opportunity to do that.
But since it wasn't renegotiated, the compacts continued. Is that your position?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Bellavia. Attorney Anderson, representing the Amici tribes, welcome home.
Thank you very much, Chief Justice. My name is Douglas Anderson. I represent the Amici tribes granted leave to argue by this court. A number of the representatives of the Amici tribes are present today. Let me go right to the contract clause question, which has been the basis of discussion, and address Dairyland's position, and then in that context talk about the discussion about Panzer. Dairyland contends that the contract clause doesn't apply saying that it's not seeking to apply the 1993 amendment to the compacts, but instead to the governor's decision on whether to extend the compacts. Well, its argument, however, is that the governor can't extend the compacts because the 1993 amendment makes the gaming activity conducted under the compacts illegal. More fundamentally, if the contract clause shields the Class III gaming rights held under the compacts from the impact of the amendment, then that amendment plainly cannot serve as the basis for saying that the governor must non-renew. In addition, the contract clause protects a party's exercise of contract rights from burdens imposed by the impairing law. This is shown by Russell versus Sebastian, where the court held that the subsequent amendment of the California Constitution didn't affect the right of the utility to pursue its business as it stood before the amendment. It's recognized by the United States Supreme Court's decision in Spanish, where the court held that a Minnesota law that required an employer to increase its pension plan contribution in the event the employer closed an in-state business or terminated the pension plan was held to violate the contract clause because it imposed additional burdens on the employer's right to terminate the plan or close the business. Well, here, in deciding not to non-renew in 1998 and 2003, the governor was exercising contract rights, the rights under Section 25. And the contract clause protects the exercise of those rights from the impact of the 1993 amendment. Now, with regard to Panzer, let me respectfully say that our position is that in deciding the issues presented there, the court did not address the contract clause and IGRA questions that are before you in this case. And in our view, that means necessarily the court didn't decide whether the rest...
Excuse me, Mr. Anderson. That's the usual first Wednesday of the month warning to test these systems in the building. So we'll just remain quiet. That was not designed to call special attention to your argument.
I won't take it that way.
You were talking about the Panzer Court did not address the IGRA and contract provisions.
Yes, and our position is that when those issues are examined, as we urge they be here, that the result shows that the contract clause protects the party's exercise of rights under the contract as they stood before the amendment. And again, this is the holding of Russell versus Sebastian, but also indicated by the Spanish decision. So we would urge that the court overrule Panzer to the extent that it held otherwise, but we don't seek to press a characterization of Panzer on this court with respect. We simply say that the contract clause and legal questions were left open and that their full examination in this case, in our view, supports the result that we argue for here. Let me say briefly, Dairyland also makes two other arguments as to why the contract clause doesn't apply. The first is simply that the governor could have non-renewed the compacts in 1998 and 2003. Well, that's not what happened. He didn't do so. And the contract clause protects contract rights for as long as the contract's in effect, even if, as in Ripperfirth, the party either party can terminate the contract on 30 days' notice. Dairyland also makes the argument that the amendments must be treated as if they were new compacts. And here we concur in the governor's position. The language of the compacts, the language of the amendments, makes clear that the intent was that the original compacts would continue in effect. And I would emphasize that the compact terms at issue here, the Section 4 right to conduct the listed games and amend the compacts to add additional games, the rights under Section 26 and Section 30, the source of these rights is the original compacts. They've been in the compacts from the beginning, and those compacts continue in effect as amended. The impairment here is extreme. For reasons the governor has shown, no public purpose would be served by interpreting the amendment to look backwards somehow to affect pre-existing rights held under the compacts. And we urge this court to hold that the tribes and the state may conduct gaming relations under the compacts as they stood before the amendment. Now, if the court were not to revisit Panzer here, we think it is clear that that case doesn't prevent the court from rejecting Dairyland's position. Why? Because the court left open the contract clause and IGRA questions. Because the games at issue in this case have been conducted by the tribes from the beginning under the terms of the original compacts, and they are therefore protected by the contract clause. And indeed, Panzer offers support for that position by recognizing that the compacts were valid when entered into, approved by the legislature, accepted from the definition of lottery in the State Lottery Definition Act, and are in effect.
But, counsel, if the 98 amendments are valid, protected by IGRA and the contract clause, because the compacts allowed for those forms of gambling plus other forms of gambling, which were legal in 92, and Panzer did not reach in Panzer itself the contract and IGRA issues, if we would decide the case as you state, doesn't that, in effect, sub silentio, indicate that Panzer was wrong? Because if it considered IGRA and the contract clause, it would have had to go the other way.
Well, again, I wouldn't, Your Honor, force a particular characterization of that result on the court, as that's a matter for the court. Our position really is that The compacts originally entered into included the law in effect at the time they were entered into as part of the compacts, and Section 26 solidified that.
And just decide that and leave Panzer alone and leave it up to everybody else to decide how Panzer fits in.
Well, we would urge the court to make clear that it's setting forth a ruling that would provide restored stability to Indian gaming and direct the parties, and that it would include what we've sought. But again, if the court didn't revisit Panzer, it seems quite clear that Panzer largely supports our position here. Very briefly, with regard to the
your red light's on. Your red light's on. Okay. 1 minute's a summation. If you do it fast.
I would simply say that IGRA directs the same result by virtue of the inclusion of Section 26 in the compacts, which is expressly authorized by IGRA's terms, and IGRA gives the force of federal law to compact terms. So that the same result would be reached under IGRA. For these reasons, we...
Ms. Bradley has a question.
Assuming that this court does not go the route of the contract clause left unopened in Panzer, and I find some of that troubling because I think it's not dealing squarely. You know, there's a certain intellectual dishonesty, even though you're not forcing, and I don't mean to, I would feel that. Anyone else can feel whatever they want, but just say you're not forcing that analysis for us to go on to Panzer, but it's there, you know, come on.
Is there any other way, other than addressing the contract clause, that we can distinguish Panzer and the 2003 compact from the 1998 compact? Is there any other way, I mean by that question, to preserve the 1998 compact without dealing directly or sub silentio with the holdings in Panzer?
Yes, Your Honor. There's two ways. One would be to address, not to address Panzer, but simply to recognize that the gains at issue in this case were lawful under the original compacts. Those compacts remain in effect, and those gains continue to be lawful. Panzer indicated clearly that it wasn't deciding the questions presented here, although in the somewhat unusual posture of the interplay between Dairyland and Panzer, there was some confusion, but I think the court expressly indicated that those were questions that would be resolved in another case. The second way, Your Honor, would be that, and let me say the tribes in the state have really turned a page of history in the compacts in tribal-state relations, and that was really possible because of IGRA. And IGRA recognizes that if it's going to work, compact promises have to be enforceable. And it expressly authorizes the compacting parties to agree on the extent to which state law will apply under the compacts. And Section 26 expressly exercises that right, and its terms under IGRA have the force of federal law and would therefore preempt the application of the 1993 amendment in any event. So that would be the second way. We urge this court to reject Dairyland's claims that would send Indian tribes in this state back into the poverty from which they're just now emerging.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Mr. Morgan, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal.
After listening to my opponents on behalf of the governor, I'm struck by the difference between our view of how this case should be resolved or how this case should be looked at. I am looking at it from the standpoint of what the words of the compact say, and the words of the compact do not put handcuffs on the governor or on the state of Wisconsin. The words of the compact say that at the end of the term, whenever that is, whether it was the 7-year or the 5-year terms, the governor can non-renew, as can the tribes. There is no fixing in the 92 compact that we are to look at 92 and prior law and never look again at any law changes that occur or that any other kinds of changes that occur in society or elsewhere. I've never seen a federal case that says IGRA fixed the law as of the date the compact was signed and no court can go beyond that. Justice Crooks asked me, why are we here? And after listening to the state, I think we're here for a very good reason. We need to decide, should this case go forward, even though the state chose last time not to appeal to what I assume would be the U.S. Supreme Court to discuss these issues. But this state and this court needs to make a decision and a statement about what are the powers of the governor. When a constitutional amendment is put into force by the public after the legislature has twice voted on it, what should the governor do? And that question is the one that we have raised. That is the question that I do believe Panzer has answered. And Panzer has said the governor had no authority whatsoever to enter into those compacts. I think that our position takes the Panzer case just a little bit further and says there is a requirement by the governor to look at the Constitution and then to enforce the Constitution. And in this case, he should have issued a notice of non-renewal. And frankly, the tribes would have remained in the same place they were in under the 92 compacts until that issue is resolved.
As I read your briefs, I thought I read, in effect, that there's no way of holding against you under Panzer.
I'm sorry,
there's no way of holding against Dairyland under the Panzer decision. That Panzer limited the governor's authority by the constitutional amendment, and you can't get around that.
I think that is the case.
That is your position.
I think that it is.
Panzer is not reconcilable with any other decision, in your view.
In my view, for two reasons. Not only does the stare decisis apply, but issue preclusion would apply to the governor, who was a party to, while not Dairyland's case, but it was a party to the same issue.
In Panzer.
In Panzer.
Counselor, didn't Panzer very specifically leave open the validity of the 1992 and 1998 compacts? Didn't it expressly say it was not addressing the validity of those compacts?
I think it said the 1998 compact was left open, but not the 92. I think it was assumed that the 1992 compacts were in force and validly signed.
It stated that. Panzer decision stated the 92 were in force and valid at the time of execution.
Correct.
Left open the 98 issue.
Yes.
I mean, that's one way of reading Panzer.
Yes.
Not everybody agrees about that reading, but that is one way of reading Panzer.
I understand.
And that Panzer did not deal with the contract issue or IGRA as to the 2003.
I think Panzer resolves the issues of both IGRA and of the impairment of contracts, because either there was or there wasn't an impairment of contract that Panzer was addressing. It was a compact that was purportedly signed by the governor in 2003, and this court was applying law to that.
And that argument was also made to us in Panzer about the impairment of contract, even though the decision doesn't turn on it, correct?
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan, and thank you, Assistant Attorney General Bolavia and Attorney Douglas Anderson, for your arguments today. We've heard this case before and have seen it on the paper on the petition for review, and your arguments, I think, are very helpful to the court, and we appreciate the briefs, which were excellent, and your arguments today. That completes our hearing on 03-AP-421, Dairyland Greyhound Park, Inc. versus James E. Doyle. The court will take a short recess so that people who wish to leave may do so, and people who are coming in for our second case may do so. We are in recess.